We're ready for argument in the case of Pineda versus the people, and the petitioner may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Nathaniel Deakins, registration number 38752 from the Law Office of Doug Wilson on behalf of Mr. Pineda. I'd like to reserve some time for rebuttal if I can. The question on cert, whether in light of the United States Supreme Court recent opinion in Gantt requires reversal of the Court of Appeals opinion, raises several issues in the context of Mr. Pineda's case. Subject to your wishes, I will start with whether under Gantt this search violated the Constitution.
Do you think you could raise that microphone, the podium there, speak a little bit more directly in the microphone?
Is that better? Thank you.
Mr. Deakins, I make a minor suggestion. Just take a deep breath and talk a little louder if you can, so we can all hear you. We're kind of old up here, at least I speak for myself.
Okay. To put this case into context, although obvious, it should be said that the search was conducted without a warrant and without probable cause. And I think that the context will come up later again if we get into the meat of the argument. The rule in Gantt articulated by the United States Supreme Court, although a surprise to some, states that incident to an arrest, a police officer may only search the passenger compartment of a car if the arrestee is within reaching distance of the car at the time of the search so as to access weapons or evidence, or is reasonable to believe that there's evidence of the offense of arrest in the car. I think in Mr. Pineda's case, the first prong or exception of that is not really at issue. What's at issue is the second prong. And in that regard, Mr. Pineda's case is a little bit different than Mr. Gantt's case, in that Mr. Gantt was arrested strictly for a traffic offense. Mr. Pineda, there's a specter of drugs. So he was arrested for traffic offenses, as well as a three-week-old, for his involvement in a three-week-old drug sale.
Okay, tell me a little bit more about the facts on that.
In the fall of 2004, a confidential informant contacted Officer Christopher Poppy from the Aurora Police Department and told him that she could provide information about drug dealing going on in Aurora.
Okay, I know generally about it, but I meant what's your position is in terms of the connection with the arrest, the trigger for the arrest? He was arrested for driving without a license or something like that?
Yes.
But he was also arrested on drug charges, or I wasn't sure what you were saying.
The trial court never found that there was probable cause to arrest him for a drug sale.
Well, wasn't there obviously probable cause once the undercover agent identified him on the scene?
Although I don't want to concede that, I think that we can, for purposes of this argument, we say there is probable cause to arrest him for the drug sale. Once the officer, the only officer who observed him 3 weeks prior, came to the scene and said, "That's the guy." Right. The question is, then can they search the car? And I think ultimately that our position is that this is a case involving staleness. That the information relied on to search the car was stale, if you will, and that's one factor in the totality of the circumstances. We're not ultimately talking about probable cause. We're talking about a different sort of maybe murkier standard that hasn't been fully fleshed out by the United States Supreme Court. But it's a similar analysis.
But that doesn't make any difference under Gantt, does it? I mean, there was really no evidence that there were any drugs in the car. I mean, that was a similar circumstance with Gantt. What's operative here is that he was removed from the car and handcuffed and didn't have access to the interior. Isn't that right?
That's correct. That's correct, Your Honor.
Well, Mr. Deakins, could you discuss the facts of where the car was and who else was in the car. And then, and I guess the evidence relating to the inventory aspect of the search.
When the car was pulled over, well, we have Officer Poppy, who I mentioned earlier, was sort of the brains of the operation, if you will. He was the lead investigator, so he was kind of pulling the strings. He asked another marked police cruiser to initiate a traffic stop. Mr. Pineda was the only occupant of the car. He was the driver. The officer, the marked officer, the uniformed officer, pulled Mr. Pineda over and discovered that he was driving without a valid license, and also that he had an altered temporary registration plate in his window. He arrested Mr. Pineda, handcuffed him, and put him in the back of the police car, which is identical to what happened in Mr. Gant's case. And at the time of the search, another officer then came to the scene and searched the car. So Mr. Pineda was handcuffed. I think it's beyond dispute that he was in handcuffs and in the back of a police cruiser. He might have even been taken away from the scene at the time of the search. The searching officer testified that he conducted the search as a search incident to arrest and as an inventory search. There's no one in the car. The searching officer testified that they were going to call a tow truck, and they proceeded as if it was an inventory search and a search incident to arrest, which in my brief I acknowledge that inventory searches are often upheld when the police testify that they were acting pursuant to procedures and policies of their police department, which is ostensibly what happened here. However, there's another aspect to the inventory search. I'm not sure, Justice Bender, if you wanted me to talk about inventory.
Well, at least in terms of my interests, Mr. Deakins, I think the real question is the one you raised in your brief about whether or not the inventory search was a pretext, and if so, how was it a pretext? It's pretty clear that the car was in an improper place, had to be removed, right? There was no other driver. The inventory issue was raised at the trial court. Not ruled upon. So the real issue seems to me is, was this an inventory search or not? Was it incident to the inventory, the administrative aspect, or was it a search for a criminal matter? You argue that it was a pretext, but I don't know what are the facts and what supports that.
I think I mostly outlined my position in the brief, but to summarize, the key question, I think that how I characterize it as the first part of the inventory search analysis, did the officers testify or were they following police policies and procedures? But there's a second aspect, which is, was this an inventory search at all? In other words, would this search have occurred at all if not for the manipulation of circumstances by, in this case, Officer Poppy? And I think the answer is clearly no, although there wasn't any testimony by the officer that any officer, actually, that said, we were searching the car for drugs. I think that the record leads to no other conclusion than that this was an investigation for drugs, that the police officers were trying to get into the automobile. I think that they, I don't say stake out, but they returned repeatedly to Mr. Pineda's residence, did not arrest him for the original transaction, perhaps for various reasons. I don't know. The record doesn't indicate why they did that. Maybe just catch him in further drug deals. Officer Poppy indicated that, and I don't know how familiar you are with the facts, but when they ultimately arrested him 3 weeks later after the initial drug buy, Officer Poppy testified that he was going to pull Mr. Pineda over prior to observing any traffic violations. And he radioed the uniformed officer and told him to pull him over for weaving as soon as he did observe a traffic violation. I think this is indicative of Officer Poppy's investigative purpose.
May I ask a question? Did I understand in your brief, though, when you talked about Houseman, did you not acknowledge that even if the officers had a subjective intent or expectation or hope of finding drugs, that nevertheless, if they actually were entitled to and did conduct a valid inventory search, that their subjective intentions, hopes, would not invalidate the inventory search. Is that correct?
I certainly the opinion in Houseman says as much. I think that I'm not asking for a rule where to rely that it's a partial mixed motive. I think that this case, we're asking for a rule that I think is already sort of, again, it hasn't been fleshed out, but the search would not have occurred at all. In other words, it's 100% motive.
Well, but how, I don't understand how we're to know that. I mean, basically you're pointing to the fact that they're certainly interested in him for drugs, that is beyond doubt. There's certainly some level of cause with regard to drugs on or about him, with your issue of staleness. But as to whether the police were interested in that, but would inventory, whether it's combined, or whether they wouldn't inventory, then it was just pretext. I mean, I don't know how you are to make that distinction on this record and without a factual finding.
The record.
I mean, the record supports either at any of those conclusions, doesn't it?
The trial court didn't find that, felt that it didn't need to reach the issue. The Court of Appeals did find that it was a valid inventory search. I think, again, I come back to the point that they never would have pulled him over at all. And I think that the statement by Officer Pop.
You're saying they never would have pulled him over at all but for the drug interest?
Correct.
Well, didn't they see him with three different temp plates in over a very short few days? The particular officer may have been interested in something else, but certainly that would frequently produce a stop, would it not?
I think the officer testified that he wouldn't normally pull someone over for weaving, or he wouldn't arrest someone for weaving. He wouldn't normally arrest someone for driving with a suspended license, or it's something you could. But the fact that they watched him for 3 weeks, and they could have arrested him for the registration plate at any time during those 3 weeks, I don't think any one of these facts or factors on its own dictates or establishes the officer's motive. I think looking at the facts as a whole, that this was a drug investigation and they never would have pulled him over had they not been interested in searching his car for drugs. Because
you do think this is a factual question and a conclusion that needs, or a finding, a factual finding that needs to be made? Is that right? Or are you saying conclusion?
I think that there's no other conclusion, Your Honor. I don't think that we need further factual findings. Again, I pointed out the fact.
Let's assume for just a moment that we disagreed with you and think that the evidence may support more than one conclusion, and we don't feel that it's appropriate for us to make the factual finding. Let's just assume that for a moment. Is this an appropriate case to remand to determine whether this was an inventory search or not?
I don't think so. I think that although the trial court didn't reach the issue, I'm not sure I'm answering your question. The trial court did not reach the issue, but the record was developed. The prosecution had its chance to establish that the search was valid under the inventory search exception.
Wasn't there testimony, Mr. Deakins, to that effect? This is what we do, and this is our couple of paragraphs by the police officer. Why we tow the car, and
yes, there,
we do an inventory research. So
there is testimony there's multiple officers involved. I think there's maybe six officers at the scene. Again, Officer Poppy, if you will, is pulling the strings or he's in charge of the investigation. He calls Officer Graham to the scene, and Graham conducts the inventory search and then testifies at the suppression hearing that I conducted an inventory search. But Officer Graham never would have come to the scene had Officer Poppy not called him, and there would have been no need had Officer Poppy not wanted to search his car. So I suppose you could say we're hanging our hat on that bad faith component of the inventory search analysis, because the officers did testify.
I thought there was also an issue with the can in which the drugs were found. It was actually opened. There's a question about whether in an inventory search you can really take things apart other than inventorying what the possessions are in the car so that they're restored at some future time. I mean, what's the rationale for an inventory search in the first place?
Well, and that's another, I think, factor that indicates Officer Poppy's motive, which is that this search doesn't appear to be conducted to protect anyone's property or protect the public. I acknowledge that there was testimony to that effect, but this search seems like a targeted search for drugs, and they found what they were looking for, and that's when the search ended.
May I ask? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I'm not sure if I answered your question, Justice Hobbs, but that is what the trial...
Well, to me, that just points for the necessity of factual findings, as Justice Martinez has suggested, on the inventory search, because it was kind of a throwaway anyway in the case, since the Belton rule seemed to be so clear based on our prior cases that you could do a search incident to arrest within the car itself, right? I mean... So this other aspect of the case was never really developed, and we're not in a position to rule on it, are we?
Well, the prosecutor, going first because the prosecutor bore the burden, they immediately suggested that there were two alternative bases for the search, for the warrantless search, the inventory search being one of them. And the prosecutor proceeded to present testimony from these officers on both. So, and that's why I say that the remand is not necessary, because I think that the prosecutor did fully develop that justification.
I'd like to take you back a second. When you were answering Justice Martinez's question, you seemed to say that this question of motivation went even to the stop, that they would not have stopped him at all, but for the fact that they expected or hoped to find drugs. You're not suggesting that there was no evidence of a traffic violation. And if there was evidence of a traffic violation, doesn't Wren tell us that regardless of their subjective expectation, the stop was okay? So are you saying that even though the stop was okay, if they had a subjective expectation of finding drugs, that would invalidate a subsequent inventory search, even if they followed their own procedures?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
The reason I say that is because Wren says that if there is probable cause to believe that there is even a traffic violation, you can stop someone regardless of your subjective motivation. And that's true in this case that the stop was valid, but I don't think, but the motivations for the stop come into play when you analyze this, what I call the second part of the inventory search analysis. In other words, the question is, did the officer act in bad faith? I think that's the term that the United States Supreme Court uses. Did the officer act in bad faith? Was this an investigatory search? I understand the cases of this court say that a mixed motive is not enough, what I'm saying is there's no mixed motive here, that looking at the factors, including the officer's motivation to pull him over, or his testimony about why he stopped the car, or how he was going to stop the car, when he decided he was going to stop the car, indicate his, there's no mixed motive, he was going to search the car, and that's why he pulled him over and arrested him and then searched the car.
And so when you say there's no mixed motive, you mean that even though, let's assume the evidence showed they followed their inventory procedure, that what? If they hoped to find drugs, that they didn't also have a motive of protecting themselves for lawsuit with regard to valuables, or didn't also weren't protecting themselves from something dangerous in the car, or whatever all the rationales for an inventory search. You're suggesting that if they had an expectation of finding drugs, that they didn't also have any of those, weren't satisfying any of those other obligations of an inventory search? Or are you suggesting that Houseman is wrong and we need to do something about it?
Well, I'm not asking this court to overrule Houseman, this case. I think that the question of mixed motive doesn't get to the heart of the argument in this case. And that is that, pursuant to the United States Supreme Court precedent, the question is whether the officer acted in bad faith. And that's another way of saying, was this an investigative search? I'm not sure if that's...
If this is bad faith, the stop would be okay, even though it's in bad faith, but the inventory search would not be?
Correct. Right. And I don't think this court needs to overrule any prior precedent in order to reach that, because I think this case reaches to that level.
Well, you're using all the surrounding circumstances, the totality. It would seem that he was actually arrested for the drug deals 3 weeks earlier, and he was placed in custody for that. And you're left with a vehicle that probably needs to be towed. Is there any record evidence regarding what the local police department's procedure for the inventory arrest was? You know, do you do it after towing? Do you do it on the scene? Do you have some kind of sheet where you put down everything to show that, in fact, what you're doing is some support some basis for an inventory search rather than a search incident to the arrest? And why are we into this good or bad faith about the traffic stop at all if they had probable cause to take him into custody on the drug charges that occurred previously?
Well, assuming for this argument that there was probable cause to arrest him for the three-week-old drug buy, the question then becomes, can they search the car? The inventory search exception allows police officers to search a car that they're going to take into custody for protecting the arrestee's property, protecting the public, safeguarding themselves from liability.
Oh, so where did this search occur?
It occurred on the side of 6th Avenue, in a through lane. In other words, I'm not arguing that they didn't, in a case where they pull someone over for weaving or for driving with a suspended license, everyday occurrence, and they arrest that person, there's no one to take the vehicle. Officers do this frequently, but this isn't the everyday case. This is a targeted drug investigation where they use these alternatives. These warrant exceptions exist, and officers use them. And I say that, I don't want to throw that term around. I don't want to say that lightly, only that the United States Supreme Court in Gantt appears to be trying to limit this type of authority. In other words, encouraging officers to seek warrants. And that's why I point out this bad faith component, which is expressed in every single United States Supreme Court inventory search case, that there's this element of the second element of bad faith. And I think even in this court's precedents, this court talks about bad faith. It's in, I can't remember the name of the case, but it's a case from this court where the court did find bad faith. An officer testified that explicitly that they were looking for evidence. So it's an easier call in terms of discerning the officer's intent, because the officer said, we're looking for evidence. What I'm saying is we don't have that here, but all the other circumstances, objectively looking at the factors, indicate that that's what they were doing.
Go ahead.
All right, thanks. So I just wanted to make sure I understand this argument. They could, if what you're saying is, let me make sure basically I understand what you're saying. The police officers can stop the car legally, right? But in this particular case, they cannot do an inventory search because they had bad faith. The reason they might have wanted to do the inventory search was in bad faith.
Yes.
And the way we know that is because of this prior drug deal.
That's one.
So constitutionally, what should have happened here, according to you, is they constitutionally could stop the car. Could they tow it someplace without doing an inventory search? Should they just, or were they, should they constitutionally have just left it on the side of the road?
The problem, I understand your question, because when you are in a situation, you have to deal with the situation.
Well, I'm just trying to play this out. What constitutionally should have happened?
Well, they should have applied for a warrant in the first place.
And left the car on the side of the road there, in that through lane?
Well, the reason they're in that position is because they're the ones who created the situation.
But they could have constitutionally created, done the stop. So they're fine up to that point.
Under Wren, yes. I think that there's maybe some tension between the bad faith component of the inventory search cases and Wren, although Wren does address inventory searches in a, I think it may be in a footnote. It's clear to distinguish the case before them in Wren, and saying bad faith is, if you will, is not a consideration, from cases in which the search is justified on less than probable cause, which is what happened here. In other words, the inventory search exception is not to be used to get around the Fourth Amendment warrant requirement.
Could I, your time is running very low, and I just wanted to get you, if you could give me a quick answer. Go back to Gantt for a second before we totally abandon that. What do you think the standard, the degree of suspicion would be that's required of Gantt? What would they what level of suspicion would they have had to had that they could actually find drugs in the car before they could have conducted a search incident to arrest pursuant to Gantt?
That's interesting question. Justice Alito expressed some dissatisfaction with the opinion for not clarifying what they meant by reason to believe. I think in reading the cases that have come out since Gantt from other jurisdictions, reason to believe, if not equivalent to probable cause, is approaching probable cause. In other words, on the scale between, if you will, reasonable suspicion and probable cause, it's much closer to probable cause. I don't think I cited in my brief, but there's a Ninth Circuit case addressing that problem. How do you quantify reason to believe? And they say that they find it's the same as probable cause. If you look at the standard for probable cause under Illinois v. Gates and cases that apply Gates, I think it's facts and circumstances that would warrant a man of reasonable belief in concluding that there's evidence in the place to be searched. So you wonder why they wouldn't just say probable cause if that's what they meant. So
would you say that should be less, a little lower standard than probable cause?
I submit that it's the same. But if not, it's darn close.
So basically that prong doesn't add anything to the car search exception. It's just if you have probable cause, you could search without a warrant anyway, right?
Under the automobile exception?
Yeah.
Yes, probable cause, exigent circumstances, or mobility, I'm sorry, probable cause or mobility, yes. So it doesn't change the Ross exception to the warrant requirement. It's sort of a hybrid test of what they say Belton meant and what Justice Scalia said in Thornton, which was true all along, that if you arrest someone, you can, and it's reasonable to believe there's evidence around that person, you can search.
Counsel, could you please apply your standard to the facts of this case? I mean, I'm concerned you've spent a good deal of time talking about how this was a drug investigation. Why could they not have some belief that there would be drugs in the car, given all the lead up that you've told us that this is a drug investigation? Why does that not work?
I think the ultimate factor is staleness. And there's other things going on. I think it's a totality of circumstances test for reason to believe, as it is for a probable cause. So you've got the confidential informant who's given Poppy some information, and she says that my boy is selling drugs. And then she arranges a drug deal. Poppy has her arrange a drug deal, and they see a drug buy. He shows up in a different car than she says he will, so there's maybe a little bit of a conflicting veracity there, or lack of veracity. I guess that, because there was a drug deal, maybe that part of it was substantiated. She says he engages in drug deals frequently. They then watch Mr. Pineda, or a man who turns out to be Mr. Pineda, for 3 weeks, and they don't see any criminal activity. And I, looking at the staleness cases of this court, staleness, I think that this case is easily decided on that basis, that one drug deal 3 weeks ago is not enough based on the nature of the activity involved. So I would, that's my ultimate point. Is
thank you.
See, my time's up. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Elizabeth Rohrbaugh, and I represent the people of the state of Colorado. The search in this case occurred on November 2nd, 2004, some 4.5 years before the United States Supreme Court announced its decision in Arizona v. Gantt on April 21st, 2009. It's my position that the officers were acting reasonably and in good faith in performing a search incident to arrest in this case. I'd very much like to talk about the good faith exception to the exclusionary rule. However, perhaps I should begin with the inventory search exception, since that is what my...
Well, first of all, are you conceding that under Gantt this was not proper in terms of our prior case law?
No, Your Honor, I'm not conceding that it's improper under Gantt, because it's one of my arguments that the officers would have a reasonable belief that there would be evidence of drug distribution in the car. So it would still be a good search under Gantt, because Gantt provided the two exceptions, and this would be under the second exception.
That's what is mysterious about Gantt, is that Gantt was suspected of drug dealing too, but they grabbed him in his car before he hooked up with his confederates, let's assume, at the house. And the Supreme Court held that that was unconstitutional search, apparently because there wasn't any indication that there were actually or could be reasonable suspicion, probable cause, or whatever, drugs in the vehicle. Aren't those the Gantt facts?
Your Honor, I think that the missing piece of that is that what the Gantt court said was that there may be a search when it is reasonable to believe evidence relative to the crime of arrest might be found in the vehicle.
Right.
So in Gantt, the crime of arrest was not related to drugs. They had some suspicion, but that was not the crime of arrest. Here, we have a crime of arrest based upon the distribution of heroin, and thus, I believe that the second Gantt exception applies.
Would that be probable cause under Rios or Alito's reasonable suspicion, or are they the same?
Your Honor, I'm inclined to think that the standard of reasonable belief under Gantt is probably closer to reasonable suspicion than probable cause because of the word reasonable. But it is interesting. I mean, if the court meant reasonable suspicion, one would think that they would say reasonable suspicion. And if they meant probable cause, one would think that they meant probable cause. So, you know, it is a bit unclear what they might have meant by a reasonable belief. I think the situation of where an individual is arrested in a home, this term of whether there's a reasonable belief that he may be found in the home, I think we see that term there. But it is curious that this term is not defined. I think it's close to a reasonable suspicion standard. But at any rate, the officers here had probable cause to arrest the defendant for a drug offense. And I think they had a reasonable belief that evidence related to heroin distribution would be in that car.
Ms. Rohrbaugh, you have said that this is distinguishable from Gantt because here the crime of arrest, using that term from Gantt, is drugs. And I'm interested in that term that they used, crime of arrest. And what I want to know is what your thoughts are on What is meant by that? And how do you decide what the arrest was for? I mean, is that what they have probable cause for? Or is that what they say they arrested for? Or, and does it matter? I mean, if they say they arrested for one thing, but they actually had probable cause for three things, the other three, for whatever reason, they weren't focused on, is the nexus to those other three sufficient, or only to what they arrested? And if it's to all three, are we really talking about not crime of arrest, but relationship to the crimes or crimes for which they had probable cause?
Your Honor, I think it makes the most sense to say what is objectively reasonable. And for that reason, I would say that the most workable solution would be those crimes for which the officers had probable cause to arrest objectively, rather than the subjective motivation of the officers involved. But I would note that the suppression hearing here, including the testimony of Officer Pop or Poppy, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, is that the defendant was arrested both for the weaving and for the irregularities in the car's registration, for not having a license, and for the drug charge. So clearly, the testimony of the officer here does support a conclusion, both subjectively as well as objectively, that there was probable cause to arrest the defendant for this offense and that he was so arrested.
Well, it seems that the court was very much interested, the Supreme Court in Gann, in vindicating the original underpinnings of the Fourth Amendment, which are to protect the reasonable expectation of privacy. The court is very explicit, it seems to me, that automobiles qualify for that. So what is the factual nexus in this case that he had drugs in the car?
Your Honor, the factual nexus that he had drugs in the car relate to that controlled buy, which had taken place 19 days previously. Now, the controlled buy was in the same geographic area, and it was a controlled buy that was made with the same car. The defendant arrived at the drug deal driving this car. As counsel pointed out, it was not this car that the confidential informant had previously associated the defendant with, but it was the car that he drove to the controlled buy, which again was in the same geographical area. So I think clearly we have this nexus of geography and this connection to the car. I think the remaining question, as counsel has said, would be whether 19 days later is too late. And he says 19 days later is too late based upon the single transaction. Now, there was only one transaction observed by the officers, but the confidential informant gave information indicating that she had bought from the defendant on numerous occasions. So this was clearly ongoing activity.
But it wasn't in between or during that 19-day period.
No, it was not within.
So that would speak to the stillness argument very directly, wouldn't it?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. I think that, yes, there was his controlled buy, which would have been observed in October, but when we look at the totality of the circumstances, we also have the confidential informant's information that this was an ongoing activity. So the question really is, isn't it reasonable to think that the defendant got out of the drug business in the last 19 days when this had been ongoing activity for him?
Could I ask just one follow-up there? I know it's splitting hairs with regard to how we decide these degrees of suspicion. Did I take it that your answer then was, with regard to what Gant means by reason to believe, that's at least as much as would be required for a Terry stop or what we usually call reasonable articulable suspicion?
Yeah, I think that it's at least reasonable articulable suspicion. A reasonable belief, I would say, would be that.
Ms. Rowell, if I understand the facts right, they have the drug information, they see the car in a matter of, I think, 2 days with three different temp stickers. The temp sticker is altered. They obviously have grounds to stop. Once they do stop, he doesn't have a driver's license. The ID he produces doesn't match motor vehicle records, which I gather means that it appears to be some alteration or counterfeit as well. The registration doesn't match the temp sticker. Are my facts right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. In most traffic stops, there isn't any reason to believe that there's evidence in the car relating to running a red light or many traffic offenses. In this case, however, it seems to me that it at least appears to the officers that this may not be his car. And with all the alterations, this is certainly moving towards, they certainly have reason to have suspicions about what the actual registration and ownership of the car is, and maybe even to the point of suspecting some motor vehicle theft. I'm interested in whether you think there's a nexus, essentially, to those crimes relating to registration and licensing, to think that there might be evidence in the car relating to those things.
Yes, Your Honor. I think under the particular facts and circumstances of this case, that there might have been evidence in the car related particularly to this problem with the registration, because the defendant was observed having the car with, I believe, at least three different temporary registration placards which were shown. And so there might be additional placards in the car. There might have been previous placards in the car. Under the facts and circumstances of this case, I think evidence relating to ownership of the car or the registration irregularities might have been found in the car. This wouldn't necessarily be true in all traffic cases, but I think under the facts and circumstances of this case, this certainly could have been. In talking about inventory searches, I think that one has to consider whether the searches are objectively reasonable. And I attached to the hard copy of my brief the pages of Sergeant Graham's testimony from the suppression hearing, because that testimony clearly lays out the rationale behind an inventory search and the policies and procedures which were in place in this case. And when we look at inventory searches, in the Wren decision, Wren clearly said that the officer's objective motivations for a stop are immaterial. It only matters whether there's an objectively reasonable basis for the stop. The Wren court mentions inventory searches in noting the court's concern that officers might act in bad faith or for the sole purpose of investigation. So when we look at inventory search cases in Colorado, we do have the Hausman case. The Hausman case was decided prior to Wren. And the court ultimately remanded the case for determination about whether the officers acted in bad faith, and that would have been a factual determination. But I think that a subjective motivation is really not all that important, or certainly not as important as the objective reasoning behind the administrative search. When we look at Hausman said that a mixed motive really didn't make any difference as long as the officers weren't acting on a wrong motivation or in bad faith. In Justice Malarkey's special concurrence in Hausman, she said that what mattered would be whether, in fact, the officers followed proper procedures. And in two Court of Appeals decisions that have been decided after Wren, I think it's important to look. In the Patnaud case, a panel of the Court of Appeals said, you know, all we really care about at this point is whether the officers followed proper procedures.
What do we do with the facts in this case where it appears to be a blend of the inventory search, which, as I understand from the transcript, would be a tow situation, and then a more methodical inventory search versus this on-the-scene search that ends up opening this canister and finding the drugs where they're operating under the Felton rule that they had an automatic right to do that?
Well, Your Honor, clearly the officers felt subjectively that they could employ both search methods in this case. Now, I don't think that there's anything wrong with starting an inventory search of the car at the scene before it's towed. The officer testified that the other officer was working on the paperwork. He testified about the fact that the car was in the driving lane, that the defendant was the only person in the car, and for those reasons, under the departmental policies, an inventory search was appropriate. So you are correct that the officers proceeded under the idea that they could and did do both sorts of search, but clearly the inventory search was objectively reasonable under the facts and circumstances of this case.
Ms. Lebron, do we know if they actually did an inventory? That is, are there a list of items in the car other than the
Your Honor, no paperwork was actually admitted into evidence.
Was that asked about?
Excuse me, sir?
Did anyone ask whether they actually made an inventory? Is there anything in the record concerning that?
Your Honor, there's this reference in the record to the paperwork being initiated, but I don't recall any reference in the record to the paperwork being completed or ever submitted in this case.
By paperwork, is the context clear that they're talking about an inventory as opposed to whatever, a traffic ticket or arrest record?
Yes, Your Honor. The testimony of Officer Graham, and I don't know how quickly I can find it, he says on page 68 of the suppression hearing, did anyone assist you initially in the search of that automail, or was it just you? Officer Graham's answer was, I think it was just me. Officer Gonzalez was there and started the paperwork for the inventory part of the vehicle. So he seems to be explicitly referring to the other officer, Officer Gonzalez, beginning or initiating the paperwork for the inventory search in the case.
With regard to Wren and Hausman and this problem of bad faith and mixed motives, would it make a difference if there were reason to believe that the officers would not have gone through with an inventory search unless they found something?
Well, I think your question is, would it make a difference if the officers wouldn't have pursued it if they had not found anything?
Right.
And I'm not sure that it would make a difference to the extent that that would be a subjective motivation, and I think it's what a reasonable officer would do that is important here. But I also think that we don't have any evidence supporting bad faith in this case or any evidence that they wouldn't have continued with the inventory search. Clearly, as I said, it was initiated in this case. They were planning to tow the vehicle. In planning to tow the vehicle, which was in the through lane, they needed to perform the inventory search for the exact reasons that inventory searches are performed, to safeguard the property of a defendant.
One of the problems may be, and I think we encounter this in the related situation of the U.S. v. Murray or our Skundermark type of situation, in which there's a suggestion that police may be acting in bad faith or pretextually, or maybe as a subterfuge is a better example, if they suggest that they're going forward with a process, getting a warrant, doing an inventory search that would allow what they're going to do, but they then go ahead and search anyway, and in the event that they don't find anything, then they wouldn't go ahead and pursue this more onerous and time-consuming process because they'd know then that it wouldn't be worthwhile. I guess what I'm asking is, with regard to a determination at a suppression hearing and also the possibility of remand here, is it factually significant? Is it something that should have to be established, that should have to be found as a matter of fact, that the officers would have or did go ahead and complete an inventory quite apart from the fact that they found evidence of illegal, of contraband in between?
Your Honor, I addressed this in my brief in saying, I cited both a United States Circuit Court opinion in saying, we will not hold that an officer's failure technically to follow the inventory form procedures for valuables meant it was not an inventory search. I mean, the fact that it's been interrupted in this case is probably immaterial based on the fact that the officers also thought that they could do a search incident to arrest. If you're talking theoretically in a future case about whether this might establish bad faith, I suppose it might in a future case, but I don't think that's true in the present case.
Well, I guess
case.
What I'm trying to do is nail down what bad faith means then. What could the Supreme Court have meant when they talked about bad faith and rent? If it's not simply a mixed motive, what could they have meant?
Well, in Wren, I have a parenthetical in my brief, so I guess it's not an exact quote from Wren. But in Wren, the court said that although adherence to procedures shows a lack of pretext, deviation from procedures does not prove pretext. So the fact that the procedures are not exactly followed does not necessarily establish that a pretext was the only reason for the search.
And is that a factual matter, then, for the trier of fact at a suppression hearing to determine?
Yeah, I think bad faith would be a factual matter for the trier of fact. But I think that bad faith is not present on this record, number one. It was not argued in the trial court that this was undertaken in bad faith. It was argued that they should have merely moved the car and not impounded it, but they're not required to do so.
I'll let you go. Let me follow up just one thing while I've got you right here, though. So with regard to this particular record, do I understand you to be agreeing that the court did not find that this was admissible also as an inventory search? It never got that far.
I also attached to my answer brief the court's very brief two-page ruling in this case. And the court, it's interesting, the court sort of turns the idea of an inventory search over in its mind. And the court seems concerned about going into the closed container, oddly enough. And so the court says, well, I don't know if they can go into a closed container. My research says that maybe they could if they had a policy. Of course, the officer did testify that there was a policy of searching closed containers. But the court then goes on to say, well, I don't really need to go there because this was a search incident to arrest in this case. So clearly, we have an inventory search being argued by the parties, and we have a factual basis for it based upon the testimony of Officer Graham. But the court decided that it didn't need to determine that a valid inventory search had occurred because it was clearly, under our understanding of Belton at the time, a search incident to arrest. Yes,
and then just, could I ask you for the one last question? Let's take you to Justice Martinez's question to defense counsel. That being the case then, if we were to decide that that this was not admissible evidence under the new test, under Gantt, what would be the situation with regard to a remand to further develop or further rule on the question of inventory search or I suppose inevitable discovery?
Your Honor, I think that this court can find on this record that there was a valid inventory search because the officer followed the procedures set forth by the department. So I think that this court can find that there was a valid inventory search on this record because it was developed at the suppression hearing as a matter of law. If this court decides that it's necessary to make further factual findings, like bad faith, although as I said, bad faith was not an issue argued to the trial court below, but if this court should find that further factual findings, such as bad faith, are necessary, then a remand might be appropriate. Now, an inventory search is one of the things that I argued in this case, and I've talked about that. I also have talked briefly about what it means to have a reasonable belief that evidence related to the cause of arrest was in the car. Again, I would like to talk briefly about good faith in this case, because even if this court doesn't need to reach good faith in this case, eventually this court will need to reach good faith for this sort of search that happened in this window of time. This, again, was on November 2nd, 2004. Gantt was decided on April 21st, 2009. And officers here acted in reasonable belief of an understanding of a search incident to arrest, which was promulgated by the decisions of this court.
Didn't make any difference to the U.S. Supreme Court, right, in Gant. And we're reviewing this directly on appeal. Why shouldn't we give the Gant relief that they found, the U.S. Supreme Court found, was constitutionally compelled?
Your Honor, there are two reasons. The first is that good faith was not argued in Gant, as far as I can tell. So we have no guidance at all from the United States Supreme Court on whether good faith applies in that case or not. The other reason is the exclusionary rule is not an individual right of a defendant, and it applies only when it results in appreciable deterrence. And so for that reason, this judicially created rule is not appropriate in the present case because it's not going to have an appreciable deterrent quality because the officers reasonably believed that their search was lawful under the Belton rule at the time.
Doesn't that just run right into the idea, though, that I think Justice Hobbs is discussing with you about decisions that change the law become effective when they're issued?
Your Honor,
apply to all pending cases.
Your Honor, they are absolutely applied to all pending cases. I'm not arguing that a Fourth Amendment precedent such as Gant does not retroactively apply. What I am arguing is that retroactive application does not necessarily mean that the defendant gets a particular remedy. And I think that for that reason, we say, first of all, yes, a Fourth Amendment precedent applies retroactively, but second of all, what's an appropriate remedy under the facts and circumstances of this particular case?
Well, don't you think that your argument is inconsistent with the contours of the good faith exception in Leon?
I think, excuse me, Your Honor, why do I think it's inconsistent
with? I'm asking you whether... Whether your idea that police are doing these activities in good faith because that was the state of the law at the time, is that really consistent with the idea of good faith as it's discussed in Lamb? It seems to me you're really pushing for an extension of good faith.
Your Honor, I don't think I am, and the reason for that is Kroll. In the Kroll case, although it was agreed that the decision finding the Illinois statute unconstitutional applied retroactively, the court found that good faith meant that the officers who were reasonably following a state statute would rely on good faith upon that statute promulgated by their state legislatures. For the same reason, I believe a reasonable Colorado officer could reasonably rely on the decisions of this court, which would tell the officer that, in fact, a search incident to arrest was automatic and didn't matter the particular factual circumstances of the case. So I think that, yes, it is retroactive, but no, the exclusionary rule shouldn't apply because it does not deter officer behavior. The officers behaved in good faith and acting upon the precedents of this court when they believed that they could automatically do a search incident to arrest in this case.
Do you consider it significant at all? How does it play for you that in his dissent, Justice Alito even seemed to lament one of the consequences of the decision in Gant would be to exclude the result in the exclusion of evidence seized in good faith by officers in reliance on Belton?
Well, are you asking me if Alito felt that good faith did not apply there?
And what significance should that have for us?
Well, I don't know that it has a significance because good faith was not briefed or argued there. So I think that it does not preclude good faith being applied in a case where it has been briefed or argued.
Well, I took it the suggestion was this would be the effect in other cases of their decision in Gant. Did you not read it that way?
I did not read it that way.
Well, it sure seems, though, that the good faith that would be argued would be reliance on a warrant. And that was issued by a magistrate, which actually, of course, doesn't exist in this circumstance, didn't exist in Gant. So I'm a little confused about the good faith argument and the Chief Justice's question.
Your Honor, Kroll did not involve a warrant. Leon certainly involved a warrant. Kroll involved a state statute. And I'm saying that there's not a particular reason to treat a state statute differently from a state Supreme Court precedent in an officer reliance situation. I think that some language from the United States Supreme Court, which may be interesting on this point, is from the Johnson case. The Johnson case involves the case of Peyton and whether Peyton should be applied retroactively. And the court admits that where there's a sharp break in the law, there would be little deterrent effect using the exclusionary rule. And it says, this logic does not apply to a ruling like Peyton that resolved a previously unsettled point of Fourth Amendment law. However, Gant is not like Peyton. This was not a previously unsettled point of Fourth Amendment law. It was considered well settled. And for that reason, officers were not crossing the line in believing that, in fact, they were performing a lawful search incident to arrest in this case.
I just realized your time ran out, but doesn't your notion that it was considered well settled, which I might be inclined to agree with, sort of run contrary, however, to some of the language in Gant itself, where they seem to purport not to overrule but merely clarify Belton?
Your Honor, yes, the Gant court seemed to feel that their previous decision in Belton had been misinterpreted, but the Gant majority clearly acknowledges that this was widely understood to be the Belton rule, and also acknowledged this was how police officers had been trained in police academies for 30 years. So it's true that the Gant court fell short of overruling Belton, saying that Belton had been misinterpreted for 30-odd years. But at the same time, it acknowledged the widespread belief, which I would say it was a reasonable belief, that a search incident to arrest was automatic. I thank this court for its time and attention. I think you have many reasons to affirm the Court of Appeals.
On behalf of the court, I thank counsel for your arguments. Case stands submitted.